Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Well,
hello, gentlemen.
Oh, I forgot. You want me to record locally.
No, you don't. Don't worry about it. We're using Zoom. Everything's going to, it's gonna sound good.
Yeah, Zoom, the official video conferencer of the coronavirus quarantine.
It's Zoom. Amazing. So, it's not a sponsor, but we'll take it.
No.
Also, Zoom occupies this brand new space of tech companies, which is their tagline is, we didn't realize we were a social media platform.
I mean, look, yeah. My kid does her class, like every morning her teacher, it's at 1 o'clock actually, her teacher Zooms all the kids that can get online and they read a book and they talk about how they're doing and everybody gets to take turns and it's like human contact in an otherwise kind of isolated time. It's really lovely. Thanks,
yeah,
Zoom.
No, we've been Zooming everybody. And we actually took my iMac out of storage and put it in the kitchen. I built a little stand for it so we can have this nice big screen. And we were talking to Julia's aunt and uncle two nights ago. We're talking to some good friends tonight. We've been sort of every night, we've been sort of lining up someone else for just before dinner to sit and talk for about an hour about how things are going.
It's amazing.
We've been eating dinners. Oh, go ahead, Norm.
No, I'm saying it's done more for, you know, feeling connected and more for the promise of this kind of Star Trek like technology than the FaceTime, you know, tech ever did, right? Remember?
Well,
it's out of necessity.
It is out of necessity, and I think all three of us have more experience than most with just how much this can make you feel like you're home. And even as far back as 2013, when I was touring around the country, my wife would put the laptop at the end of the dinner table, and I would sit on a tour bus in the middle of America having dinner with Thing One and Thing Two and my wife. And honestly, it's like after a while in VR, you forget you're wearing VR. You're just kind of in the space. And the same thing with this kind of, even though there's a little bit of a lag, the fact is like I'd finish and felt like I had dinner with my family.
Yeah.
Well, that we do that with my that's the way my daughter kind of knows my parents, right?
Wow.
Is that once or twice a week we sit down and have breakfast and we put the phone up in front of her and she can talk to my parents while we all eat, and they eat lunch, we eat breakfast because they're 2,500 miles away.
Amazing.
And I mean, yeah. So here we are as a country Zooming. I wonder what their traffic has gone in the last 2 weeks.
I mean, it must be bonkers. If you're signing up for a new account, it takes hours to get a confirmation because, you know, with one of those accounts,
really?
you can get 100 people in one room together. And we know, like you said, schools are doing it. All sorts of people are doing it just for like their social hangouts in the afternoon. People are doing things on a regular schedule. But the thing that blew my mind, because it's only been 1 week that we've been doing this in San Francisco, and it feels like a month already.
Each day. Yeah.
My favorite tweet this in the last 2 or 3 weeks is, and I retweeted it, but I can't remember the name of the original author. They just said, I can't believe how young I look in pictures from this morning. And that is exactly how this feels. Have you noticed, have you read any of the accounts of the trolls finding Zoom? Oh, yeah, it's bad. Of course, if there's something that people are utilizing for goodness, somebody else is figuring out a way to screw it up. So there's been people who've had open Zoom parties.
Oh, yeah. Hunter Walk does one of those on
and if you allow screen sharing by default in any of those open parties, people are going to show up and put porn or awful images of just death and destruction. And so there's been a whole bunch of public parties on Zoom that have had to be shut down, because Zoom has no content moderation in its business model at all, because they didn't consider themselves a content company.
Yeah. I did see a couple of videos that were on Reddit or Twitter or something the other day where people did like embarrassing stuff when they weren't thinking about the fact that they're on Zoom with 50 people and like, you know, tromped off to the bathroom and, or you know, whatever it was, which like, look, the new normal is weird. So here we are.
Oh, I'm very cognizant when I'm live streaming from the cave in 2 hour stretches that even if I walk away from the workbench, they can still hear me taking a leak. So I make sure to go before.
We're all wearing pants, right? I mean, pants.
Look, I'm
not wearing pants.
Donald Duck in over here. So it's
Daniel
it's,
Tiger.
Well, the thing about the streaming, especially, and you, this is new for you, I think, Adam, right? I mean, you've done some streams on Twitch and stuff before, but not kind of where you just normally would be alone in the shop doing your stuff. I watched you on maybe Tuesday. Wait, hold on. What's today? Monday? Tuesday? Monday, October? Yeah. Monday? I watched you last week sometime.
Yeah.
And like it's really kind of it's cool just to get to watch and have like you come up and talk to the camera occasionally, but mostly you're just kind of watching you do stuff, and it's very chill and relaxing, and kind of takes you out of it takes me out of my head. So I appreciate
it also that. And me too. Like I don't have a distinct experience of time passing or having to fill time. And look, you know, I've spent, I think I did the math at one point through the course of Mythbusters, I spent well over 15,000 hours on camera. And even so, doing the streaming last week was like a wholly new form of, I wouldn't call it performance, but it is that sort of like that public communication, right? I've done it on stage, done it on television, I've done it in all sorts of different formats. And, you know, the videos we've been making untested for the past few years are also different. And the streaming is just like another one to add to that with its own kind of confines and rules and, you know, perimeter. It's fascinating.
I was thinking like it's most akin to when we used to do Lego builds, right? Big builds mm-hmm. with people. We would have friends over and for 2 hours build. But with those, we would have other people in the shop, in the studio. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing it, because all you have is the iPhone that you're streaming with, right, pointed toward you, you have almost no feedback, and you're just kind of riffing, and it's a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's a little more personal too, the streaming. Like you end up, I think you have chat off now for obvious reasons.
We're turning, I think we're going to try it back again. We turned it off actually specifically because we were buffering so much, and we were just trying to find every efficiency we could and then come back in with the layers. I'd like to activate chat if I can.
Okay. But I mean, when you have chat going, people can ask you questions, and it's like, it's interactive in a way that mass media, I've never experienced mass media being before, which I thought was really cool. It's right. Part of the thing I like about streaming games and making stuff on Twitch and all that. It's a lot of fun.
And Will, you find that like when you stream, the people in the chat, it's like own the mini community, right?
It has
the immediacy of when you've been following like a forum thread for years. But it's all, you know, the same, you know, a couple hundred people might be watching, but it's the same dozen people who are going to be there every night. And they have their, you know, their in jokes and their references and their rituals.
I mean, it's a small community by like mass media standards. But like the Discord that I started up around my Twitch stream is now 500-600 people strong. And like there are people in there that I've known. There are people that I've known from Tested Live shows, right? There's multiple people that I met at Tested Live shows back in the day. There's people that we met at PAX the first time we went to PAX in 2012. And it's just it's a community that requires no moderation, which is such a pleasure to participate in.
Yeah,
you know, versus you know, forums and message boards and all that stuff. That's always like a little bit of participation and a lot of work for people on the ownership side. So I'm a fan. I like the streaming.
I was here over the weekend for a couple of hours each day, just taking care of some projects for home. My wife, for her work, needed a stand at a really specific height for her work computer. So I came in and built one, of course.
Yeah, that's what it does.
As one does. Yesterday, I was making a stand for our iMac so it can move around the house where we want to have conversations. And there was a knock on the door, which is uncommon.
Yeah.
And I answered it, and it was two of San Francisco's finest, two officers. And they said, they basically knew that I was there, and they wanted to come and say hello.
Wow.
Yeah, it was delightful. They were Star Wars fans, and they'd known that the shop was there. I think most of the local police, you know, which is not far, the police station's not far from here, know that this is where I have my shop. And they came in, and we chatted.
1.5 meters, I hope.
No, yeah, actually, yeah, I'm giving most people now 15 feet. I'm giving most people 5 meters.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing as I'm walking around the mission these days is that Everyone is moving to opposite sides of the sidewalk, or even just standing between parked cars as people walk by. We're at least here in the Mission, it feels like it's being taken more seriously by the hour. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about this for a second? Because
I think we need to
last week. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to make this announcement. And I read this the other day and I really dug this. If everyone on Earth entered their house and didn't leave it for 14 days, we could potentially kill the coronavirus like that.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of our body of knowledge about the incubation period of the virus, et cetera, of course, that number could change. But that is a broad-based understanding of the fact that it's people not staying in their houses that will keep this thing going and going and going and going. And so I spent last week feeling very much like, what can I do? I have resources. I want to help. And I have been plugging people with other people. I've been getting requests for help, and I've been putting those people together with other people, and that's felt productive. But seriously, the single most productive thing every one of us can do is stay indoors.
Yeah.
That's it. That's your civic duty right now.
Well, you don't have to stay indoors. You have to stay away from other people. You can go on walks. You can go on hikes. Yep. You can go to the park. Just don't go play basketball, or don't hug your neighbors. Don't, stay 10 feet away from people and you're fine. And it's funny. Somebody the other day was like, somebody asked me if it's better for them to just go to the grocery. They don't want to hoard. So they're not going to the grocery store and stocking up for like 2 weeks. And I was like, look, it's not hoarding to stock up for 2 weeks. It's hoarding to buy 30 packs of toilet paper, right? It's buying enough food so that you don't have to leave the house for 2 weeks is what you should be doing now if you can. Exactly. And the fewer times you leave the house, the less likely you are to get sick. And like the language that we use, Kishore talked about this on This Is Only a Test last week. But the language that we use of a mild case is a wild misnomer. Like, this is a thing you don't want to get. Nope. So whether you're 20 or 15 or 65 or 90, like, avoiding getting infected is the best thing you can do for yourself and for your family and for your friends and for everyone.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and talking to medical professionals, sorry, voice conferencing, talking to medical people, I have some friends who are nurses and doctors, and we're talking to them, and they're worried about what's about to happen, because it's going to be not great. They're worried about their family and potentially bringing this home and infecting their family at the time that you definitely don't want to get people you love sick. Mm-hmm. And they're doing things like moving into the mother-in-law suite in the basement of downstairs, moving their parents out of their mother-in-law suite so that they can take over that and just planning on not seeing their kids for the next month or 2 months or whatever. And these people are making big sacrifices. So let's not fuck up their sacrifices by being selfish assholes.
Before you start, Norm, I just want to say that speaks to the specific consciousness, which is, it's not about keeping yourself from getting infected. It's assuming that you are a carrier and not infecting anybody else.
I think we do have to draw a line between the selfish assholes and the people who may take it seriously, but understand that it is going to have a direct impact on their lives because they're not as lucky as us to be able to work from home, right? Yep. And that's where the resistance is, I think, really being felt, and empathy for those people and finding a way to help those people is something I've been trying to think about. Because if you're, and we've seen all the videos on the news of the people who are going to spring break and people hanging out at Dolores Park and not taking it seriously. Yeah, those people are selfish, and I don't think, hopefully they're not listening to this podcast, but I think a lot of that fear from our listeners are people who feel stuck, who feel it's not just about the isolation, but it's about how this is going to affect their livelihood.
Yeah.
They don't know what the economy is going to be like, and they don't know what their job's going to be like, even if they're in a place right now where their work can support them. No one knows what's going to happen in 3 months or in 6 months.
Well, and
welcome to the club.
The other thing that one of the silver linings that could come out of this is there's been a movement afoot over the past few years in the disability community to allow far more robust work from home allowances by employers who have. There are some employers who are great about it, but a lot of employers are very reticent to allow it to start work from home programs. And hopefully this kills the idea. Look, there's a lot of gatekeeping about whether listening to a book was reading it. And then the simple rhetorical flourish of, are you going to tell a blind person that they're not reading if they're only listening to books because their eyes don't work? No, you're not, because you're not an inhuman asshole and you realize that that's how they would be able to take in the book. This is the same thing. You know, you are able to be productive working remotely under so many circumstances, and hopefully we learn some even brand new ones to allow high productivity and high employee interaction and all of that without having to be in each other's physical presence, because that's going away for a while.
So
that's the other thing, service part of all this.
I was gonna say, the other thing I want to say, Kishore talked about this, and this is only a test too, but like, it depends on what your specific flavor of anxiety about this is. Mine is definitely fed by reading news and getting more and more nervous about what's going to happen next. I didn't look at news from Friday until Sunday, and it was really nice. My mental space is much better. I was sleeping better. I was exercising, feeling good. Things. Yeah.
You'll totally appreciate this. The other night, Mrs. Don't Try This and I were like lying in bed about to go, you know, doing our final sort of like surfing the web. And she reads up on one of the senators who cashed in a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
After
dirtbags.
His briefing before the market showed volatility. And she got super mad about it. Of course, it's enraging. And she was all like, "Ah!" And so I immediately closed her laptop, opened mine, put on West Wing, and stroked her back until she fell asleep. It was like West Wing was the ball.
Yeah, it's the sun's going down, big guy. Sun's going down.
Sun's getting real low. Yeah. Yeah,
sun's getting real low.
How far are you now?
That's funny.
We are still moving through season four. The inauguration has just happened, and now
that's the re-election inauguration, right? Yeah,
the second inauguration, and now Will Bailey is furiously working with a bunch of interns, turning them into a speechwriting team. I love Josh. Oh, right.
His Karens.
He's so good.
I just love that guy. I've gotten to meet him a couple times. He's every bit as awesome in person as you would hope. And I just, the West Wing makes me, it's a very, very calm and loving place to go.
I got five episodes left in the series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Season seven.
It turns out that I never watched season 4, 5, 6, or 7. I only watched seasons 1, 2, and 3.
It's very bingeable. I mean, 22 episodes a season. You could do 3 a night.
Season 4 is the last, it's the last Aaron Sorkin season, isn't it?
It is. It is.
All right.
Yeah. There are great moments in season 7 and 6. 5 is, I think, it takes a while to restabilize.
All right. I am actually spending some time working through West Wing. The second season is something I had never watched. And so
Westworld.
Westworld. Sorry. West this, West that. West
Hold on.
Anderson.
Michael Sheen's a robot?
I don't know anything.
Are you enjoying it?
Are you enjoying it? Yeah. I bounced out after the first season.
I finished the first season and loved so much of the conceptual stuff. I loved so many of the characters. I felt like it had dragged in a couple of places. Two or three episodes felt sort of peripheral. Season 2, I'm loving the spit out of it. I love the extra mysteries, and I'm glad to not be paying so much attention to Ed Harris's character's awful fantasy fulfillments every episode. It's nice not to have to live inside his head in the season so far.
Evan Rachel Ward's a badass in that show. Yeah. And they gave her a lot to work with in season 2. I think what's really interesting from a show making and show writing perspective is that's a show that's very aware. And I'm sure you could say the same about Watchmen. The showrunners and the creators, Jonathan Nolan, Lisa Joy, are very aware of the hardcore fan community in a way that maybe we'll say the Game of Thrones creators were less cognizant of or less engaging with. So they wrote this fantastic season 1, obviously without having that kind of public feedback, saw how obsessed fans were, and then leaned into that, all that mystery in the season 2, knowing that people would try to pick it apart from every shot and every piece of dialogue. And I still think they managed to walk away with a lot of twists. It's a season that is maybe, some would say, over convoluted. I'll be interested when you get to the end what you think.
Yeah.
But when you get to the last like three or two episodes, all the twists start coming together, and it makes you want to rewatch the season to see what they're going for, and the performances stand out extra well because of that. And then the season three, which is airing now, is almost even a bounce back from that, and it's a little bit of a reboot. So definitely where it's
all right.
It's shaped by the public reaction to it and the fan reaction to it.
I think that the ensemble cast is incredible. Tandy Newton is insanely great. Evan Rachel Wood, I have been a undying fan since she was a young person playing a teenager on Once and Again.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Which was lovingly called 40-something by those who watched it. and her work in that show at the age of like 12, 13, 14 is totally mind-blowing. And if you watch there, we actually had DVDs of a couple of seasons of Once and Again. And so you can actually listen to the showrunner walk you through a scene in which 13-year-old Evan Rachel Wood has to have she's at a diner talking to someone and they're revealing something and they don't know that she doesn't know it. And so she's both realizing it and hiding that she's learning something new. All of this complexity on this young actress's face, and all of it just like totally amazing. She's been an incredible star since she first showed up. So it's so delightful to watch her have such a meaty role.
Before we continue on with the show, I want to let you know that support for Still Entitled comes this week from Microsoft Surface, introducing the new Microsoft Surface Laptop 3. With its beautiful touchscreen, you'll experience stunning graphics with razor-sharp resolution. Now available with a 13.5 or 15-inch screen. And with the latest processors, there's no project the Surface Laptop can't handle. It's both light and powerful, so you can get more done on the go. Visit surface.com/laptop3 to learn more. That's surface.com/laptop3. Now back to the show.
We watched Onward the other night.
Oh, Pixar.
The Pixar movie. Yeah, they released it on purchase, or I think it's Disney Plus next week or the week after. It was really a sweet, like, it was not at all what I was expecting. It was did you see it, Norm?
Not yet. No.
Oh yeah. It's a super sweet, really lovely story about, being a parent, being a brother and being a kid. And, it had a lot of the feels. I was sad. I'm glad they released it. I'm sad that it made no money in the movie theaters because of, lockdown, but definitely worth watching. And I think it's on Disney Plus in a couple of weeks.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, Adam, you showed us before we started recording something you were machining. And I know for your live streams, you're doing the Ecto-1, right? So for people who don't know.
Well, I was doing the Ecto-1. I'm out of parts. If Eagle Moss, we've been talking to Eagle Moss, the makers of that serialized Ecto-1 kit. And they may have some more parts to send me. We're finding that out. So, yeah, up till now, I've been streaming that. But I'm streaming small projects here in the shop.
Right. And, okay. And the Ecto-1 is a perfect project because it's a benchtop project. You have it, you're basically in one place in the cave working on it. You're working on painting, assembly. Yep. You can show the camera. Have you thought about what it would mean to do something like a machining project? And you've done some machining, right? You showed us some machining you did earlier today.
Here is the
wow. Did you put lights in it? Or does it come with lights?
It does have a full lighting system. These fog lights did not have bulbs in them. They weren't bulbs. They were little nubbins that looked like bulbs. So I actually swapped them out for some pre-resistored LEDs, orange LEDs I had because they're the fog lights. I even did some weathering on the Ecto-1 sign. Wow. There. Hold on. There you go. Ah, there. That's it. There.
For people listening to the audio, Adam is showing the front grill of the Ecto-1 kit. This is a 1/10 scale Ecto-1.
1/8 scale of the ambulance hearse from Ghostbusters, known as the 1959 Miller Meteor Cadillac. It's a classic. And I'm actually also, I'm weathering it as I go. So here's the, here's part of the engine transmission. Wow. And so I've been making it look like a nice old piece this whole that's time. Lovely. Yeah.
What's really striking about that grill is I think when it arrived in the kit, it was super shiny, pure chrome. Yeah. And it actually looks more like chrome now when you have the grease on it.
This is something that's really fascinating because like when you're making props at home, one of the just the biggest bugbears in the prop and cosplay community is how do you make shiny metallic stuff? And one of the fascinating things when you go to Weta, for instance, is how much of their shiny metallic treatments are paint treatments and how you don't need to see your face necessarily in a metallic reflection for it to sell to you that it is made of metal. And in fact, I posted a picture of this on Twitter this weekend. When I first had my Rocketeer backpack chrome plated, I was super excited to open the box and see it. And as soon as I saw it, it looked terrible because it was way too monochromatically shiny. It was basically a mirror. So all the reflections from everything in the room hit the pack and you couldn't even really see it until I took it down with some steel wool and some Scotch-Brite and then a black wash. And that black paint, which is actually, there's black oil paint all over this bumper. And that helps create some more shadows in the corners. It creates some, it is stuff you really can't even single out with your eye. But if I held up a fresh bumper next to this, you'd immediately see that this one looks more scale and more chrome, even though it's slightly less shiny.
So what, you use oil paints for that, Adam?
I'm using a host of different ones, but yes, for the on the black on the chrome, it is an oil. I'm using oil because it lasts so long, it stays extant so long, and actually with any turpentine, I can kind of reactivate it and take it back off if I felt like I put too much on.
Interesting.
I have today, a couple of those.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, today I've been machining part of a. Let's see here. Oh, this thing here. This is a cast iron kit called a die filer, and it is basically an elaborate machine that takes a file like this, and this one has a sort of a very specific profile.
A teardrop almost.
Yeah, and this is the rod the file sits in. This is the clamping system, and the file just goes up and down like this, kind of slowly. And I learned about this machine on Clickspring. Chris uses it a lot for some of his very fine final filing of parts on clock making. And this die filer is like, there's nobody who makes, they used to get made. I don't think there's a current maker. And so a lot of machinists build their own. And I bought a cast iron kit and I've been slowly going through. So I've got this is part of the carrier piece for it. I have a slot machined out of this piece of cast iron. And this piece of bronze, which, by the way, this piece of bronze comes from a salvaged propeller shaft from Mythbusters from a boat we destroyed.
Wow.
Yeah. The boat had this like inch and a half thick bronze propeller shaft. And Jamie and I were like, if we're going to blow this thing up, Jamie, go get the portabin and let's save some of these chunks of bronze. And so I got like a 4 foot length and Jamie got a 4 foot length. And this piece is machined out of that. And its That's tolerance awesome. In here. Is
wow
it's maybe about a half of a thousandth, which means it moves really smoothly but there is no rattling at all, and what that just means is the more finely you machine something like that, the less vibration you introduce to the system and the more cleanly all the power from your motor gets to the output, which in this case is a file going up and down.
Hey, Adam, I bought at Christmas time, I bought a couple of those Bandai SnapFit Star Wars spaceship model kits.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about doing some soon, but I really don't like, I know we've done a ton of videos over the years that tested with how to do the weathering and stuff. But what's the quick and dirty? I don't want to buy, I don't have 55 different kinds of paint here to finish that stuff. It's just buy an acrylic and kind of do dirt black washes and stuff like that, you think? Or?
Well, first off, the Bandai kits have lovely castings, if I remember correctly, and they're really well-made, well-engineered kits. They don't have a lot of flashing that requires a ton of sanding. Am I correct about that?
That's right. Yeah, they're you need a pair of good nippers, and you can kind of do a little nail file, is my experience. But I haven't built a model kit since I was a teenager, probably.
With any one of these, you don't want to try painting the basic plastic. You often want to take what's going to be your base color, which in Star Wars universe is often a white or a very light dove gray, and hit all the sprue trees with that before you're even snapping the parts off, or pull the parts off, put them with glue tack at the end of some swizzle sticks, and give them a basic coat of primer as you're assembling. You don't want to primer over the areas you're going to glue together, but making sure the whole thing has a basic coat of paint is one of the and with the Tamiya, the little Tamiya, you can get lacquer paint in that. It dries really fast, it's really hard, and after you've assembled, you can go in and do some touch-ups. And then, a black wash over that. That's most of a Star Wars paint job right there. I mean, there's all sorts of other stuff you can do. You can add a couple of other washes, and you can... my favorite thing, and we got to do a piece of this untested, is my favorite last pass of a spaceship is after you've done the panels, and then you've drawn in some extra panels, and you've done some different grays to call out panels. One of the last things that ILM painters used to do for big spaceships is they would have cutouts of different panel shapes, and they would spray on top of the final paint job semi-gloss and gloss panels, and some of them even specular with luminescent paint in them. And these are panels that you mostly wouldn't see unless the ship is turning to the light. And then you get this extra reflective kick that adds way more detail than you think with just this last painting pass. Huh. And we got to do this on as a one-day build, because it's really neat. I have a couple more scratch build model projects to show.
And you do that after the model's assembled?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is literally like after the model's not only assembled, but mostly painted, like you've done all the final detailing and all the masking. This is like the specular highlights are the very last pass.
Cool.
And you can make stencils on cardstock that are small, like you're almost cutting out almost like Tetris shapes, Tetris block shapes to scale with whatever 1/44th scale or something for that Bandai kit. They're snap fit, so you don't need glue. And Tamiya gray primer is a pretty close gray to the Star Wars Imperial ships.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thanks, Norm.
Yeah, and you want you want a nice fine brush for your rust streaks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one in Star Wars is rusty.
The one I was going to start with at least is, I think, a TIE Interceptor. It looked like the easiest one, so I can kind of get a feel for how long it's going to take and whether these are multi-day affairs or it's a single one-off. So yeah. I'll let you know how it goes. Maybe we'll do it next week sometime.
That sounds really fun. I have a, I think the kit I might build tomorrow on the streaming, or actually, I guess that's today, because it's
later
going
today,
up Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
So later today, I'll be streaming from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I've got here a gizmo kit. This is this is a Ghostbusters prop that the Ghostbusters wear on their belt right there. And this is, I'll talk about this, but it's kind of a mind-blowing kit. It's an eBay purchase. This guy sells them occasionally. And if you can get one, I'll include his username and all that. There's nothing more accurate out there. It's cool. Totally incredible.
Yeah.
And it's lot. It's actually the original gizmo was the motherboard of a calculator from the 70s that you can't buy anymore. Like if you can find it, it's in the hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And of course there are some Ghostbusters who have done that. This is actually a guy who had circuit boards printed in the same and correct color.
Wow.
Oh, no, it's like that. And then you're soldering stuff onto the circuit board, but not to make an electronic circuit, just to make it look like an electronic circuit.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
it's very neat. I can't wait to see that. That sounds fun.
Are you going to record the building of the Bandai kits? Are you going to do any...
I'm going to try to stream one. Yeah, I think I'm just going to stream it on my Twitch channel. Not that Will Smith on Twitch. I'll post on Twitter if I do, so that people can pop in. I played some Half-Life Alyx this morning and had a bunch of people pop by for that. So,
and I know people are looking for stuff to do. Ton of people are buying these kits. Break. Be careful. Also, you know, we have each of our own operating procedures when receiving new packages. Yeah, if you have wipes, wipe down. We're breaking down all our boxes and washing our hands immediately. And thank you out there to anyone who works for delivery service, because they're all working extra hard.
They are.
And they're all, you know, abiding by the guidelines. So all that is very appreciated.
Hey, Norm, are you Go ahead, Will. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have a whole new appreciation for what's essential for society to continue than I did before. Right? So, yeah, thanks to the delivery people and the people working in grocery stores and drug stores and the mail carriers and the firefighters and the cops. And God bless the teachers, man. Teachers rule. Holy cow, do teachers rule. sweet mother. Yeah.
Sorry, Norm. Are you guys, like me, getting lots of photos of empty San Francisco?
I haven't gotten a whole lot. Oh. I haven't left the house, really. I just walk around Pacifica.
I didn't realize I was taking a series, but I was looking for Julie and I were, my wife and I were sharing back and forth some photos recently, and I realized I had all these photos of just empty streets. I have a photo of, we went to Hayes Valley to pick up some pasta from a pasta restaurant over there. And Hayes Valley at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night was Omega Man.
Wow.
And it just was super far out. And, you know, it was like, I was telling my son who just arrived from Chicago this morning or last night, he was like, how serious is this? And I said, this is the most serious thing to happen to humanity since World War II. And I think it's on balance in some ways going to be more significant, but yeah, it's hopefully impossible shorter. To say right now. Hopefully shorter.
Hopefully shorter.
Look, here's something someone pointed out to me. This is like a war, except we're not expending a ton of energy figuring out how to hurt other people.
That's true. That is true.
Which is a big silver lining, man.
Yeah. Well, so it's funny. I was playing Half-Life Alyx, which is set in the Half-Life universe, which is a post-alien invasion, post-apocalyptic scenario. Right. And I was playing it this morning, and the whole time through, I was kind of like, usually, just to be clear, usually post-apocalypse stuff is straight in my wheelhouse, is my jam where fiction rolls. And yeah. I don't know if I like it anymore. Like, nothing against the game. The game's great. But I don't know that I'm, like, it feels completely different after having been locked up in the house for, I mean, we've been in for two weeks now. But yeah, things feel a little differently when Saturday we were doing an inventory of how much food we have left in the house and like, when do we have to leave versus when do we want to leave? And, you know, thinking about stuff in a kind of different way. So,
yeah, that's so, I mean, my mom was asking for something to read. And by the way, hey, my mom came out of quarantine this morning.
Oh, nice.
And
oh,
by good. Quarantine, I just meant that we've been keeping her in the basement for.
I mean, you can just keep her down there if you want. No, we aren't going to tell anybody.
Maybe we'll have her on the podcast next week. She's always done very well. Yes. Yeah, she arrived from New York. Basically, we've figured out the length of time since last contact and when it's safe to hang out with each other, and it was this morning. So it was very nice to hug her for the first time in, since she arrived here.
Were you just sliding food trays down the stairs every once in a while?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, yeah. That's horrible. That sucks.
And then thing two also arrived from Chicago, and he is also now sequestered for a couple weeks.
Wow.
Well,
I mean, I don't think it'll impact him as much as it would septuagenarian. So
yeah, exactly. Octogenarian, thank you. My mom is
octogenarian.
85.
I'm sorry, I apologize, Carl. you always Norm, go low, Adam. That's what I've been told.
Norm, how's your little squiblet doing with all this?
He's doing all right. I mean, nothing's changed for him except he gets to see Dad a lot more. And Dad has a better appreciation for what it takes to watch a child for, you know, the 12 hours he's awake every day. So as Danica likes to remind me. So, you know, it's all about if there are any tips, right? My we're figuring out, it's only been, like I said, 1 week, but it feels like a month, but already we're finding new routines, new operating procedures, schedule, going for a walk at a set time every day.
Yeah.
And
keeping a schedule is so important.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sleep in till 11 more than I do, but I just know there'd be a point at which I'm up until 6 a.m. every day and sleeping until 2 p.m. or something insane.
Yeah, it's real easy to fall into real bad sleep patterns. I mean, actually having the young kids around helps with that, because my daughter gets us up at 7 at the latest every day. But like getting up and taking a shower, I've been doing a lot of Beat Saber and Pistol Whip when I have some downtime to like just get some movement that doesn't involve me going outside.
Yeah, exactly.
My legs, I mean, I'm going to go and tell you, my legs are getting to be ripped at the end of this, man. but yeah, the like just figuring out ways to keep them entertained. I mean, yeah, it's challenging.
And having a different understanding of what a weekend means, right? Like, you know, yes, there's the work week and there's the weekend, but if everyone has the same weekend and is using that time to go take a hike, then we're thinking maybe it makes more sense to use our weekend time on like a Wednesday or Thursday and kind of realign or space it out differently. And these are the kind of the new normals that we're figuring out. And even if the whole, you know, all of this crisis and lockdown might be over in, let's say, 3 to 4 months, you know, there's a chance that we might have to go back into a 2 week, you know, quarantine, self-quarantine every 6 months or so, just throwing numbers out there. But in terms of like a reoccurring
vaccine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When you start to look at the growth models of COVID-19 in municipalities that took it seriously super early, it's crystal clear. The data shows that literally every hour you can set a lockdown earlier affects dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of lives. It's totally amazing how fast that operates. And that's one of the reasons that South Korea was so quick at dealing with their situation, because they had previous experience and utilized that to their own advantage.
I mean, they were hit hard by SARS and didn't forget the lesson and were prepared and stayed prepared, which helps a lot. Yeah. One of the things that's helped us a lot from a week in your future, having variety on the days. So like we do a movie night one night. I mean, we do movie night way more than one night, but like we do a movie night where we sit down with the kiddo and we watch a movie and, you know, do popcorn and the whole thing. I think we're going to make the living room into a movie theater and like rearrange the furniture and stuff, just doing things to make it different for her. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, part of our challenge is that she's old enough to kind of know what's going on, but not really be able to, like, we can't talk about the whole thing with her, cause it'll terrify her and she won't sleep for a week.
Yeah.
But that part is really challenging. I know that there's millions of people with kids that are, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15 or 5 to 12. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what an 8-10-year-old can handle, but I know that it's,
you didn't have kids during 9/11, but I did.
No.
The boys were, they were only, 2.5, 3 years old, but there was definitely a point, at which it was recommended, turn off your damn television.
Yeah.
Because while your kids might not understand what's going on, they can understand the stress and the tension they're seeing in the news readers. And I think one of my colleagues at ILM told me that his daughter called the television the hurting show.
Oh, no.
It was about a week and a half after 9/11. It's like, I can see that Maggie understands when Julie and I are stressing out. She can really see it. I mean, it's because there's some. I've been watching a bunch of Jerry Seinfeld lately because Comedians in Cars has been so much fun, and he was doing a public appearance, and an audience member said to him, "Hey, do you have any marriage advice?" And Jerry goes, "Yeah, I got some marriage advice for you." He goes, "It's a really good idea to make sure you don't go crazy at the same time." He's like, "You're both going to go crazy. Just as long as one of you is sane while the other one's crazy, it'll be pretty easy to deal with. Just don't do it simultaneously." And I'm like, that's fantastic marriage advice.
It's convenient if it works out that way, right?
You don't always have control, but it's nice to recognize that's what's happening if it is what's happening.
Wow. Yeah,
I think
we woke up this morning and at Mrs. Don't Try This's suggestion, we did some Eckhart yoga. Mm-hmm. They're doing some yoga and some simple movement and meditation at 9 a.m. every morning. And that just half an hour, 30 minutes of that, some movement and some meditation was really, really much needed kickstart to the morning. And I really liked it.
Yeah, fresh air really helps.
There's a ton of really cool things that people are doing and creating. Like your stream is one of them. Mo Willems, the children's book author, is doing like a daily doodle I think it's on the Kennedy Center. It's part of the Kennedy Center thing. Neil Gaiman's been reading books. Hey, Maggie. Hello.
There she is.
And then as is the tradition with Zoom, we end each call with a show off your pets scene, I guess. It's like there's a ton of cool stuff. There's a bunch of like museum tours. There's museum curators that are doing behind the scenes. There's all sorts of neat stuff that you don't normally get to see that people are putting out there. And it's really, really surreal watching somebody walk through like the American Museum of Natural History and there being nobody there.
Oh, like, my God.
It's so, yeah. So weird. Far out. Anyway.
Maggie can tell. We're recording this at just before 5 on Monday afternoon. She can tell that it's just before 5 and she's letting me know that it's time for dinner.
Yeah, bring the food, man.
Awesome. Well, it's good to see your faces. And
you too.
We'll be continuing to do this. For people out there, stay tuned for Adam's live stream. It'll be on Tuesday at 1 p.m. and we'll do announcements on social media for the next live streams.
If you're subscribed to the YouTube channel, you get a notification for
you do,
right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, yes. So subscribe.
Yeah. Subscribe, guys. That's what we ask for.
Subscribe.
sorry, I apologize.
I was just going to reach through it and punch you. Request for suggestions. There's a game that I've been playing with some friends called Sets and Runs. It's often called Russian Rummy. It is a rummy type game where each hand has slightly different goal parameters for what you're supposed to do with your hand. It's really fun and it takes a couple of hours to get through a full 7 hands of it. But obviously not a game you can play easily in quarantine. And I'm wondering about online card playing games in which I could load in X number of decks and X number of people where we could sort of, you know, where the structure exists, I could use my own game rather than play somebody else's game structure.
So Tabletop Simulator works like that on the PC. I don't know if it's available for Mac, but it's a piece of software on Steam that lets you basically every board game I've ever looked for that sold more than a few thousand copies is probably loaded in as a structure there.
All right.
And some of them require you to kind of manage the rules. It's just right. Like it just is art and assets, yeah. And you can, you know, handle it with a mouse and keyboard or gamepad, or I think even VR now. I can't remember. We've been playing Battleship and chess with friends on over video. Battleship works shockingly well.
Oh, nice! But
even like chess, even like my daughter is playing with some of her friends, so that's been good and is like structured communication with other human beings. I'm trying to think what else. I don't know. I asked people on Twitter the other day, or maybe here last week, to suggest some games that you can play from across, like kids can play across the street from each other.
Oh, nice.
And there were a few things that came up there, but nothing really great. So I'm still open to more suggestions on that front.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys.
Stay safe.
Stay safe. Yeah. We'll stay away from each other.
Yeah, don't touch. Don't touch anyone.
let's be careful out there, everybody.
All right, we'll see everyone next
week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.